Welcome back, everyone, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. One of the themes on this show, we call them the exit interviews. And the exit interviews are about talking to people who have been through divorce, to share their divorce experience and journey, to explain what it was like for them in terms of the most challenging issues they faced in their divorce, what they could improve on, what they loved that they did, and what they learned from the experience and how their life is going now. Because divorce is a new awakening. Divorce can be the beginning of a new life. We have as our guest today, Samantha Whaling from just outside of London, England. Welcome, Samantha.
Hello, nice to be on here with you to talk about positive divorce stories. I'm loving it so far.
Well, yours is phenomenal, and I want to get right to it. I really enjoyed our pre-interview. So, Samantha, first thing, how did you learn that you were getting divorced? What led up to it?
To be honest, I was completely blindsided. I did not see it coming. I got told by my ex-husband, I feel different. And that was it. The marriage was in a slight rut, but nothing that would ever have led me to believe that divorce was on the cards. So for me, it was just the case of, I feel different. That was the one sentence he said to me.
How long were you married at that point?
We had been married for approximately 7 years, but together for 20 years.
Ah, so may I ask you, what made you get married if you had been together so long prior to that?
Well, strangely, it was my ex. I didn't want to get married. I was happy the way we were, but he wanted it. And we wasn't even engaged or anything. And I said to him, well, look, if we're going to get married, I don't want a 10-year engagement. We're just going to do it. So he proposed and we literally married a year to the day of the engagement. But it was him that wanted the marriage, not me, which is really strange.
Interesting, since he's the one that wanted out of the marriage. Did you have a big wedding or was this really low-key?
I would call it a middle-sized wedding. We had approximately sort of maybe 50 to sit down in the day and another 100 in the evening, close family and friends.
Oh, that's sizable.
Yeah.
In standards, that's pretty sizable. Okay, so can you please explain, and in whatever intimate details you feel comfortable saying, how was the message delivered to you that he felt differently and was considering leaving the marriage?
Well, the first conversation was, I feel different. And I have to say, we had a kind of marriage that we didn't have these big arguments. He didn't sleep downstairs. He didn't storm off. We was never that couple. So when he said that, I kind of knew that he meant it. And he just said, I feel different. And I was like, okay, let's try this. Let's do that. But he wasn't interested. And then he said, I want to leave, literally a day or so later. And that was it, basically. There was no room for negotiation, no conversation. He had made his mind up previous to having that conversation with me.
So from that conversation to when he really left, could you discuss those details, what went on?
So it was a six-week period because my youngest son was about to leave primary school. And I said, well, you can't leave until he finishes school because it's such a big thing, leaving primary school, going to secondary school. He went, okay, I'll stay for then. And in my mind, I thought we've got this six-week period to kind of sort it out, but it just didn't happen. And over that six-week period of time, we still acted as a normal married couple. We still socialized with friends. We still slept in the same bed. We were still intimate. He would text me every day when he left from work, are you okay? I love you. So we acted like a happily married couple for those 6 weeks. However, he was leaving and that was it.
Samantha, he texted you, I love you?
Well, every day he would text me, I love you. He would go to work. He'd leave before me and he would always text, you okay? Did the boys get to school okay? Because obviously I had two children. Yeah, and I love you. And he did. And he texted me, he loved me after he left me several times as well.
I'm fascinated by this. That part I'm really fascinated by. I'm also fascinated by the intimacy that still kept on in those, what, 6-7 weeks?
Yeah.
Leading you to believe that possibly it wasn't going to happen?
I think in my heart, I knew he was going to leave because, as I said, our marriage and relationship was never that I'm going to leave. It was never something we ever said to each other. But I hoped he wouldn't, if I'm honest. And I was scared. I was petrified as well because I'd been with this man 20 years of my life. I'd lived with him longer than my parents and my siblings. And I just felt that I was codependent on him, if I'm honest, because we'd been together for so long. He was the breadwinner. And because he acted the way he was, he loved me. I'm sorry. I love you. And I remember he's saying, I deserve to have a happy life. I can't stay anymore. But I really love you. It was really, really, I think he was very conflicted himself. But the law of the new life and the other woman was too much.
Could you please address that, the other woman? When did you find out about this? When did this lady come into his life?
Well, he never admitted it, and he never has to this date. But the reason I found out was when you do a divorce in the UK, you have to do this Form E, and it's financial disclosure. And she had transferred large amounts of money into his account to help support him in the flat he went to. And there was receipts for hotels and things in his bank statement. So it just became evident that he had been having an affair.
So there was a separate piece of property involved, your house, her house, and then a third place?
He rented a flat, which she actually paid for the 6 months up front. So that's when I became aware. He did admit to me not long after he'd left, he'd met someone. So he left in the July, and I think he admitted to me 6 weeks later, or so, I can't remember exactly, but within a couple of months, I've met someone new. That was it. That's all he said.
And this was prior to filing for divorce, when actual financial information was brought forward.
Yeah.
Okay. Very interesting, you know, how intricate our lives become sometimes, but how conflicted, even the person leaving seems to be conflicted. And so there's two journeys going on, right? There's the one who's initiating the leaving, and there's conflict of emotions there. And then obviously the person being told that they are being left, that's a whole different journey.
Okay. I think it's selfish. An affair of any kind is selfish, but I think it's more selfish when he had however months to make that decision and to get his head around it. And then when he told me I had 6 weeks, he'd had months of the affair to get to his decision. And then obviously he tells me, and I'm expected to, within 6 weeks, accept it. And when he's gone, he's gone, and that's it. But I think the lever obviously leaves the marriage a lot more earlier on mentally. But they don't give the person they're leaving that time. They have the courtesy themselves to have that time, but I didn't get that time. And I think I'm more angry in some respects with that than the actual affair. And I've forgiven him for the affair. That was his choice, but it's his behavior I've not forgiven.
Okay, you just said so much. First of all, here's what I talk about a lot with my own clients when I'm mediating and then on this podcast. There's the emotional divorce, and then there's the legal divorce. And if both people don't go through the emotional divorce first, the entanglement of A, your heart, then your head, then your finances and your real life, it's very difficult for one or both to deal with the legal divorce because you have emotions pent up, right? But you have to make these real life decisions and you have children.
It's so hard when your emotions are just up in the air to make those decisions. And I was lucky I had my family behind me that made some big decisions for me, because emotionally I wasn't in a position to make those big decisions, because I just wasn't. Simple as that. I just wasn't in that right frame of mind.
No, and we aren't. We actually need time to catch up, time to process, And you really don't know how much time that is. I mean, it took me a year. I had one of the most amicable divorces known to mankind. I was sad for an entire year until one day I just snapped out of it. You know, fortunately, I had my own job. I had my own money. I wasn't worried. We didn't have children. But still, and I was okay with it. I mean, if you want to leave, you want to leave. But it took me a year. Okay, then you said something else very significant. You forgave the infidelity. Talk about that a second, because that's major.
Because I think that for me, it's a fact of life. He met this woman and he had an affair and they fell in love and they've decided to go down that path. And I wouldn't want to be of a man that had an affair with a woman anyway. I wouldn't want that. And it's heartbreaking, but that's fine if that's your choice. But I did not, I will not, and I haven't deep down forgiven the nastiness and the way he treated me. But I realised that was about his guilt and not about how he felt about me.
You mean, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think because I was I tried to talk to him and he was just mean from day one, but that was his coping mechanism, because he would pick the children up and walk down the road, park down the road so he didn't have to see me, or he would avoid looking at me, or he would not talk to me. And he said it's because he hated me, but I don't really understand how you could hate me a week after moving out, because the money side and the divorce hadn't even started. And that's what I won't forgive him for, because I think I deserve some respect after 20 years. But
so, okay, I've done several episodes on infidelity. I interviewed a therapist who wrote a book on infidelity, and he said it's the best, worst thing that could happen to anybody's life if you can use it properly. And then the thing about forgiveness, I think forgiveness is a very interesting concept, and I like talking about forgiveness, because with forgiveness, you get power and control back in your life. So you forgave the infidelity, which is amazing, because it takes people a long time to get over that. I know what that's like. I've had that happen to me. And it didn't faze me like it fazes a lot of people. I think I reacted much like you reacted. It's a symptom. It's not really the cause. And I would more focus on the cause, or if I really wasn't allowed to do that, let's just focus on me getting over this. But the nastiness. So you were together for this 6-week period after he initiated the conversation, but waited until your son graduated from that level of school he was in. And you were okay though during that period, right? So the nastiness started when the filing started, or when he moved out?
Literally, I would say within 24 hours of him moving out, he just turned. He absolutely turned from the man I knew to someone that was mean. And he'd never been like that with me. He'd never treated me that way. And that's what I will always struggle with. And I will never understand what he done. I think I'd like to blame the other woman being in his ear hole saying, blah, 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 but he was when he was me, his own man. I don't think he is now from what I can surmise, but I don't care to be fair. But I think he was proving something to the other woman rather than to anyone, to me, because if he's mean to me, he can justify leaving me and why he's with her. Oh, she's terrible. She's this. I think, who knows? But the meanness was hard for me to deal with, because there was no need for it.
I can imagine. And I'm not a therapist, so I'm not even going to take a guess. And I don't know either of you. So that would be unfair for me to say anything. But it sounds like you've kind of hit the nails on the head in terms of that. And I'm very sorry. How is it now with both of you? Is it easier?
No. To be honest, I did see him a while ago when one of my sons was poorly. We was together and it was very amicable. And the following day I said, thank you for your help. I had no response. No, that's okay. No, if you need anything. But when we was in the room together, it was amicable. We were civil and polite to each other. But that's it. Other than that, no, there's none whatsoever.
When you say your son was poorly, you had said to me when we talked initially that he was in the hospital, unfortunately, yes. Not well.
Yeah. He was very poorly, but he's absolutely fully recovered, thank goodness. But it was a point where he needed to be there and we needed to be together. And this will happen going forward with, you know, the children may get married, they may have children. So these events are going to come and go. But yeah, we was together and it was absolutely fine. It was pleasant. Well, I don't know if pleasant's the right word, but it was completely amicable.
It wasn't the same mean. Well, you know, interestingly enough, when I mediate with people who really haven't gone through the emotional divorce or one person is behaving adversely, if there are children, that seems to be quite often that connective point where they can put down arms, so to speak, and connect in a much better way.
You have to.
And it's wonderful to see. I wanted to bring something up that you had told me when we originally talked that I wanted to share with the audience because I think it's fascinating. And it comes under the umbrella heading of dealing with the reality versus the ideal. And you had told me that a little prior to the announcement, I'm feeling differently, your husband had gotten a tattoo of you and the two kids on his back, and it was large.
The whole of his back, a massive tattoo, and it was both my children are Leo star signs, and I'm a Sagittarius. So it was two lions, one sitting, one standing, and a Sagittarius woman draped across them. And it was the whole of his back. And in Latin, it said, "My family, my life." And this was in the April, May time, and obviously he left in the July. So obviously when he told me I felt different, I thought, well, you've just had this tattoo, you know. But he did say to me at the time he was trying to prove to himself, but it was one hell of a way to prove to himself that he loved me. And it's something that he's kind of stuck with, really.
I am told that it's ultimately painful to have a tattoo removed, and if it's something that large. So, you know, that's fascinating because my guilty pleasure is watching reality shows on a station in the United States called Bravo, but I think it's syndicated in England because there was a reality show out of England that was shown on Bravo. And on a couple different of these housewife shows, the Housewives of... people got tattoos. Right. So Tamara Barney on the Orange County Housewives, right before she says, "I want a divorce," gets something about her husband, Simon Barney, tattooed on her finger. And then she's gone. "I want a divorce." So I think you're right. It's really interesting. You kind of want to prove to yourself when you're on this precipice, you know, this pivotal point of where am I going to go? To encourage you to kind of stay in the relationship because the guilt of leaving is really huge. Mm. And maybe the nastiness was covering up the enormous guilt and the enormous tattoo.
And the Christmas, so he left in the July, and the Christmas before he bought me a car. It was like, he said he bought it, but it was also leased. It was a 4-year lease, a 35,000 Mercedes car that he signed up for 4 years. But he was planning to leave. You know, you think, what are you doing? He was conflicted. He surely, but the law of the other woman was just way too much for him.
Okay. All right. Now, this is what so many women are afraid of, and men too, but more women. So generally, especially if there's children, women are the lower wage earner, generally. And, once in a great while, men are. And it really doesn't matter whether you're the male or the female. When you're the lower wage earner, it's a whole different level of fear that comes into you because you need to earn money to live, right? So can you please address going through that and where you are now, career-wise?
So I'm still in the same job I was with when I was married. I work more hours. I work in an estate agency. But my salary wasn't enough to support me and the boys. And I was, if I'm honest, financially, I just didn't even comprehend it because I was heartbroken. And then as the months ticked by and I realised he wasn't coming back, panic set in because I was thinking, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? And it wasn't necessarily about my lifestyle. I wanted my boys to have the lifestyle they should deserve. And it was almost, how can I give them this? How can I give them that? And I think I overcompensated really on weekends away, trips out with them, because I didn't want them to feel like they was losing out. And I remember my boss is amazing. I've got the best boss in the world. And he helped me out. I do more hours and I earn a good salary. I probably could get a job and earn more money, but I'm okay. I'm comfortable. I'm not as comfortable as I was when I was married, but I am comfortable. I've got a nice home, a nice car. Obviously, it's not what I had, but it's all mine and I've done it on my own. And I'm super, super proud. And I'm probably, if I'm honest, in my heart, deep down, happier than what I was when I was with him in a strange way. Even though I wouldn't want to wish divorce on anyone, I think I've come full circle as me, as an individual, not with a new partner, not with a new partner to help me pay this. I've done it on my own. And believe me, it's achievable, but it's tough, but it is achievable.
Very heartwarming, very inspiring. And one thing people should know that is different about an English divorce as opposed to a United States divorce, you don't have what we call alimony or spousal support, do you?
No. So what I earn, I get money for my youngest son. He gives me maintenance for him, but that's it. He doesn't contribute at all to my eldest son. He works now, but he's never contributed anything extra. In fact, he's been very much like, I'm not paying for that because I give your mum money each month. So I don't get any help from me personally, considering we was together 20 years. He has a great job. You know, he has done really well for himself, but I enabled that. But hey ho, I got the house. I did get the house. So I didn't come away with nothing, but I had to fight for that as well. And it was the biggest fight of my life because that fight enabled me to be where I am now.
Could you just explain that a little bit more? Because that again is heartwarming that you could take a challenge and turn it into something very positive for yourself.
So we basically, he walked away with nothing. He just walked away with his clothes. He left me the house. It was mortgaged, but I sold it and I bought a smaller house that was a wreck and just did it all up top to bottom. I mean, me and the boys were literally through the winter knocking walls down on our own. I can't tell you, the garden, the grass was up to our waists. We did all that. And yeah, we just rebuilt a life together, the three of us. And we've built a really good life. And I think the boys actually are happier in this house than what they was in the marital home because they feel part of it. They knocked down the wall to put that door frame in. They helped me rip the banister out. They knocked down that wall to make the room bigger. Do you know what I mean? They was part of it from the beginning to where we are now. But it was hard. I'm not going to say it was easy. It was heartbreaking leaving that house and having to start again and to do. And every decision I'd made with my partner, my ex-husband, we made together. And all of a sudden, I'm making all these decisions on my own about how to rewire a house, how to put central heating in, first fix, second fix, plastering, you have to let it dry for 48 hours. All these things that he kind of dealt with, all of a sudden I was doing on my own and it was petrifying.
But you feel much more in control of your life, don't you? You sound like it.
Well, I've come out of my divorce many, many ways, stronger. Probably a little bit sadder. I'll always have a little bit of sadness in my heart. But I think I'm a kinder person and I'm a much more grateful person. And I think that I'm just happier with who I am. I've always had, unfortunately, that sadness will always be in my heart because I've experienced the divorce and infidelity. That will stay with me forever. But these things do. I lost my dad 10 years ago. That will stay with me forever. So sometimes as you get older, these things, they make you who you are, but I'm more grateful and I'm definitely a kinder person. Definitely.
So beautiful what you said, so philosophical, because life needs to be a balance. I mean, I've always said, well, why do we have to have negative experiences? I love positive experiences, but we don't. We do have the good and the bad. And when you have these, what look like to be very negative experiences, or we'll just say sad experiences, losses of certain sorts, we kind of need those to foster gratitude and appreciation and really just a better understanding of ourselves and the strength that lies within us that we don't know until we're challenged.
Exactly that. Everything you said, exactly.
Now let's talk about relationships. This is another really interesting aspect of getting divorced. So when you have children, especially, you have married couple friends generally that have children. You meet through school, you meet in the neighborhood. And then when divorce happens, what happens to those relationships?
Oh my goodness, we could have 20 million podcasts about this. It just changes the dynamics so much. Silly things like you go out with a group of friends, you're the single one, and all the men typically would go to the bar, they'd get the rounds in, and the women typically wouldn't do that. All of a sudden, you're there. And obviously, you can't expect to be included in these rounds because you're the single person. Also, you don't want to be included in them because it's too expensive and you're only buying for yourself. Initially, I think a lot of the people would buy me drinks, almost out of a bit of sympathy. They knew where I was. But actually, as time went on, I wanted to be my own person. So I'd go, no, I'll get my own drink. No, I do this. Married couples I'd known for a long time, I would socialise with them, and their husbands, they might put their arm around me or I'd give them a hug. I'd known these people for years, but the women viewed me differently. It was almost like all of a sudden I wasn't married. I was a single woman, and the dynamics changed. And I did lose some friends. I didn't fall out with anybody. I just lost some friends. And I think we mutually parted ways. That's the easiest way to put it, because it just didn't work. However, it sounds really sad, but again, it's not, because I'm now surrounded by my friends, and some of them are still my married friends. They love me for who I am, regardless of if I'm married or not. So the ones that we parted ways from, they're no real loss, because they would have stayed by me. They would have still been my friends. So again, it's a really positive thing, because I'm surrounded by friends that love me for me, married, single, broke, rich, poor. They love me as a person. So it's actually a really positive thing.
That warms me so much too, because I've talked to so many people and they're very saddened by this, don't understand it. And I kind of think that it's a difficult position to be in as the friend. You don't know what to do, how to do it. Sometimes people choose sides. They choose one spouse over the other spouse. I guess particularly if you started being friends with one spouse very early, kind of understandable. But I loved what you said about the people who really loved you for you, regardless of the fact that you were in a marriage and anything else about your life, are still with you.
And you've got to remember, when the breakup first happened, I wasn't comfortable to be around. I talked about my ex incessantly. I was like, where is he? Who's he with? Trying to find out where he was, what he was doing. I think I made people uncomfortable. I was sad. I was very tearful. So I think people just couldn't cope with that. But my real friends did. That's the one thing. But I came through that period, you know, that age old thing you see on the movies about the girl eating ice cream with a bottle of wine. That was me. You know, not the ice cream, unfortunately, just the wine, but never mind. But, you know, that that was me. And, you know, my friends, bless them, they take the mickey out of me now. They go, for God's sake, you was an absolute nightmare. But it's how you go full circle in your friendship. So, yeah, it's honestly, you just get through it. It's not easy. I'm not going to tell you it's easy, but you will get through it, and you'll be better. You'll be surrounded by people that love you. And actually, I consider myself really, really lucky, because I know that the people around me love me even when I wasn't nice to be around, and they still love me. And there's not a lot of people in the world that can say that.
You're absolutely right about that. And the other point you made that I loved is, people don't like you for the money that you have, hopefully the people who really love you, and satisfaction and enjoyment of life are not equivalent with what's in your bank account. Yes, we need to know that we're safe financially. It's horrible to have to worry. But there's a big difference between being able to pay the bills and living in a nice house and in a nice neighborhood versus the most money you can possibly have and the biggest house that you have. that's not where happiness is. Happiness is with you and your sense of accomplishment and your ability to get through the hard times and come out of it in your own way.
Exactly.
Yeah, crafting your own life and your own identity. I love the fact that the boys helped build the house.
I mean, massively. They learned so much from it. And actually smashing down walls, it was good for all of us, because I think a lot of aggression went out in smashing the walls down. It was great. And the boys learned loads, actually, from it. So it was a really good project. And I do think, actually, when you go through a divorce, a project's good for your mind, because you get so wrapped up in the divorce. And for me, my ex and who he was with, and you know, then I was, you know, I'd be Googling who is she, and you get so caught up in it. But when you have a project, you're caught up in that about paint colours, what kind of radiators to have, what kind of sockets to buy. It's something to focus on. And I do sometimes sit in my living room of an evening and I just smile, because I look at things that I've done and achieved. I look at my kitchen worktop and I go, oh, I do like that, because I picked it myself. It's really silly, but it's true.
No, it's not. It's so heartwarming to hear you say that. I'm so happy for you. And I do hope that your ex-husband comes around at a certain point and it becomes an easier ex-relationship, because you have the kids and there are going to be so many life events that are coming up. It would be great to enjoy them together in your present circumstances. So I really wish that for you.
Thank you.
But I would like you to leave with, what are the biggest learning lessons you got out of this that you can share with the audience?
Don't be kind. Try not to get too angry. Just sometimes let it go and pick your battles, because sometimes when you're arguing over really stupid things, they're irrelevant. Just let it go and think, focus on you. Don't focus on them. Don't focus on your ex. Focus on you and your new life. It's hard, but that is the one thing you need to do, is focus on yourself and be selfish. Because I find a lot of people that have been blindsided by divorce aren't particularly, they'd never think about themselves. They think about everybody else. Think about yourself for once, because that's the most important person at the end of the day.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, Samantha. Thank you for taking the time and the courage to talk about this. I think
good luck to everybody as well out there that's going through a divorce. I promise you, you'll get through it. Hang in there.
Excellent. And they will. They will, especially if they take your advice. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
Thank you for having me.
And thank all of you for listening. This is Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host. I thank you for listening every single week. If you would like to add to the conversation, you can email me at Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com, Judy at constructiveuncoupling.com, or if you're in the Southern California area and you would like to investigate my services as a mediator or a document preparation company, my business is Divorce Resource Incorporated, Divorce Resource Inc. Thank you again, and we will talk to you next week.